Hey, I'm very, very pleased to announce an expansion here of the Zeoli Show. We're going to be launching our official podcast exclusive. So exclusive content that you can only hear by listening outside of the terrestrial airwaves from 3 to 6, so to speak. So you want to go to cbsphilly.com/rich, and you want to continue to hear and have the conversation and engage even after the show ends every single day. And we always encourage you to get our podcast as well. And I am super excited and very, very honored to have joining me the man who I would say is a true legend in talk radio. He's the guy who continues to prop up our industry, keep us all going, and keep us all inspired to believe tomorrow's going to be a better day for talk radio, as challenging as the atmosphere gets. I'm talking, of course, of the publisher of Talkers Magazine, Talkers.com, the one and only Michael Harrison. Michael, thanks for making the time here in Philadelphia. Welcome back.
Well, first of all, Rich, thank you for the very nice words. And I'm honored to be a part of this new endeavor in terms of the expansion of your audio repertoire.
Well, you've done a lot of the podcast stuff yourself. And I go to talkers.com every day and I check it out. And you're really kind of seeing this as the forefront of where things are going.
I think podcasting is an exciting development, and I've been talking about it in the industry now for a couple of decades. I once started a website called stickless.com. Stick is a term for your listeners that those of us who've been in the business of radio a long time refer to as the model of the AM or FM station with the transmitter tower and the license. We call it a stick. So stickless means being able to broadcast without an AM or an FM, or as it's known today, a terrestrial radio station. And I don't think podcasting is the end all and be all of broadcasting, but I think it's a great addition. It's all part of the movement toward on demand, which works very well with instantaneous radio. That's great in terms of reflecting the moment and the now. Used to be in the earlier days, the thing that used to frustrate me as a broadcaster, and by the way, I'm celebrating my 50th anniversary as a professional broadcaster.
Congratulations.
So I've seen a lot.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I've seen a lot of changes. I'm very proud to still be on the cutting edge. But one of the things that used to frustrate me was that, unlike writing or making a film or a video or anything that has permanence, radio was the kind of a medium that it was instantaneous and often into the air and gone. And it's amazing how most of the great radio broadcasts in history were never recorded or kept. They're gone, or unless you want to go out into space several light years away and listen in, you know, that way. But now with on demand, it's raised the bar, because what you do either live or for a podcast specifically is sort of like publishing something that has to have legs and pertinence, not just now, but for all time to come.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because that's how I feel a lot of times. You know, we'll have a great moment in the show, something really clicks, something works, and then I think it's gone. It's instantaneously gone. So because we're able to podcast it, we can drive people to listen to that. But that is one of the problems that I think, not a problem, Michael Harrison, but I think a challenge we have in talk radio is that when it's on TV, you know, there's a YouTube clip which can go viral. It's hard to get an audio podcast clip to go viral. Do you think I'm wrong about that?
Well, no, I think that this is a very interesting aspect. It's a media theory component of any discussion about radio. Because we're in the digital age, almost every form of media, whether it's film, whether it's television, whether it's newspapers, magazines, even music, has a video component, because we're all converging on the same appliance, and that is a computerized device that has a screen. And radio is theater of the mind. Audio media, if you will, is designed to go into the human consciousness through an audio way, through the ear, a different part of the brain, a different part of how the human mind perceives and processes something. And that's why they call it the theater of the mind. But it's the only of the 20th century media that is on this device now and doesn't have anything to show on the screen. So it's sort of like half a medium. And I would really hate to see broadcasters give up, or listeners give up, on holding the media that is the theater of the mind in a very special place, because it's a very different animal than television. And I don't want to see radio broadcasters trade in the infinite possibilities, the endless stage that the theater of the mind presents, great radio, for really bad, cheesy television. And because it's really hard to compete with Hollywood and the big TV companies and the production and the digital, they're making King Kong look realer than if he were real. it's hard to do that.
I know, but it loses something,
Yeah, but I do believe that we have to not worry. We can't be so worried about things going viral. Viral is a result. It shouldn't be a goal, because it's not authentic. It becomes pretentious. It becomes contrived. There really is no rhyme and reason about viral. When you look at the things that go viral, sometimes they're like, wow, how did that go viral? But if you just do good quality production, good quality programming, be authentic, and let the chips fall as they may, you'll be better off.
Michael Harrison is the editor and publisher of Talkers. Talkers is the Bible of talk radio and new talk media. And I'm so happy that he's joining us here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and for the Zioli Show podcast exclusive. So, Michael, what do you make then of this trend now, which I think might have started with Stern, but maybe even Imus, I'm not quite sure. And now, say, even Glenn Beck does it, where the Glenn Beck Show now largely is Glenn and Pat and Stu and whoever else is there just sitting around talking, and that's on the radio, but it's also filmed, and so you can watch it at the same time. Is that a place where you see things going, or do you think the show inherently changes then for the camera?
I think the camera changes the show, and I think it becomes a television show. And there's a huge difference between a television show and a radio show. I don't want to sound like a Luddite or a throwback, but I'll be honest with you. I think that having followed contemporary music, when MTV came along and the music video was invented, I think that the quality of popular music was diminished, because it was very difficult for average-looking or even ugly musicians to get recording contracts, because they were signing people who would look good on video. And if you didn't look good on video, well, that's sorry, you're out to lunch. That means we wouldn't have had Bob Dylan. We wouldn't have had Laura Nero. Not that she wasn't good-looking, but she wasn't a glamour girl. It's the same thing. And when you have a bunch of people sitting around in a studio, if it were a real radio show that was totally focused on the audio listener, it wouldn't be a pretty thing to watch.
Very good point.
So, but that's okay. I'm not saying that what they're doing is bad. Obviously, Howard Stern does some pretty good video work with the radio program. But some of the mystery is gone as a result of it. And on one hand, there's some benefits. On the other hand, something is lost.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. The theater of the mind, something we kind of get away from a lot. So then if it's not looks, it's personality that drives good talk radio, right? Or a good sports talk radio, or even good jocks, right? I mean, it's got to be the personality then.
Well, it has to be the personality. I think that radio is personality driven. I think that information is important. I think service is important. I think that, all of these different aspects of what we call content are important. But I think the main engine that drives radio as a show, that's why we call it, the Rich Zioli Show, as opposed to the Rich Zioli Lecture, the Rich Zioli Convention, the Rich Zioli Conference, discussion group. Right. It's a show. And the thing that makes it a show is the component of personality.
Yeah, so when other hosts call their show a program, how do you feel about that?
That's okay. That's a classy way of saying. All right. That's a classy way of saying show. A program. If you really want to get academic about it, a program is an academic way of looking at the agenda that a show covers. It's a little bit of a broader approach. So you could have a program for a convention, a conference, a symposium, a discussion. But I like the word show, because let's not kid ourselves. It's a show. Back to what you said before, your concern about viral. There's a concern about how many eardrums, how many eyeballs, how many brains are we penetrating? This is an obsession. And you know something? Ever since social media has taken hold, not only are professional media people obsessed with ratings and metrics, but now the garden variety hobbyists, people that have their own Facebook pages and their own Twitter accounts, they're obsessed with how many friends they have. You know, it's a very telling expression, Rich, is the expression, like me on Facebook. What does like me on Facebook really mean? Think about it.
Right. Michael Harrison, let me ask you, 50 years now you've been in broadcasting. You've seen careers rise and fall. You've helped careers rise and still continue to do so with Talkers.com. I mean, listen, it was 2008 or 9, I think, when I went to the Talkers convention in New York. I had literally never done talk radio. I wanted to do it. I went to the convention. I met Lori Cantillo, who was the program director at WABC in New York at the time. Now she's at NASA, I think, right?
She is. Yeah, she's in public relations at NASA, and I kind of envy her. That's sort of my other great, oh my gosh, yes. And she's good at it.
She's good at it. And, you know, I was there, and I just went up to her and said, listen, I want to do this. Can you... I'd done a little bit of fill-in work on PhD back then at nights, but the internet show, I mean, nothing. And she said, sure, and she gave me a shot. That happened because of Talkers. I mean, you literally put that together so people could mix and mingle there. So then I have to ask you, one of the frustrations I had very early on trying to break into this business was I wasn't a name. And so part of me looks at somebody like, say, Chris Christie. I think to myself, the guy's good. He's very good when he fills in on WFAN. But let's face it, if he wasn't Chris Christie, he'd have to get in line too. He may take over for Mike Francesa tomorrow or whenever Francesa leaves. And it's because of that power of his name versus, you know, having to start out in a small market and work his way up.
I think radio has lost something because of its corporate parents, the corporate way of doing radio. And radio has become extremely corporate over the past 20, 30 years in a gradual way. It came with consolidation, etc. I think one of the things that has been lost is the corporate approach to radio is we've got to get big names on the air, even if they don't have a lot of experience, because it's easier to sell a big name to the advertising agencies that don't pay that much attention to the art of the industry. They're just interested in something they can relate to quickly. They look at numbers and they look at names, and it's a lot easier to go out and sell someone like Chris Christie than it is to sell Joe Blow, who just was brought up to New York from Kansas City because he sounds good. And as a result, I think that we've lost a lot of the radio-ness, the radio culture, and those elements that make for quality radio on a number of levels. One, there are skills attendant to being on the radio that these celebrities don't have. And two, a kid that grows up through the industry and radio loves radio for its own sake,
right,
and brings an excitement to it and patience, because you can't make it overnight in radio. And this is something also that has been lost in the corporate environment that radio finds itself. And the same thing is happening in the music industry and the record industry and television. We got to have a success, and we've got to have it now. A movie comes out. What was the box office this weekend? Mm-hmm. And if the box office wasn't good, heck with word of mouth, the movie disappears. In radio, it takes a while to create a relationship with listeners. And a lot of the celebrities, you know, ex-politicians who went to jail and now are making a comeback, or were disgraced, or former movie actors, or people that were just celebrities for the sake of being celebrities, they want instantaneous gratification. And a lot of them lose interest when they learn the hard way that there's no instantaneous gratification in radio. You got to do it for its own sake. And that could be day after day, hour after hour, week after week, month after month of slaving behind that microphone. And before you start to get that feedback and you start to get that big audience, it could take so long. And they run out of patience and they don't stick with it.
I always think that if, you know, as a TV example, Seinfeld would have been canceled midway through their first season because the first season of that show was terrible. And the first couple episodes of that show were terrible. And if that show aired today, in this day and age, right now, it never would have made it 9 seasons. There's no way to the point you're saying, Michael Harrison.
Well, how about Star Trek? Star Trek was canceled. They canceled it after, what, 2.5 years, 3 years? The greatest entertainment franchise in the history of the modern era was canceled because they didn't think it was going to make it. How about Cheers? 11 years Cheers ran. Many of the seasons it was number one. It was always in the top 10. But its first season, it was almost dead last. And if it wasn't for the fact that Grant Tinker was president of NBC at the time, and they didn't really have anything else to replace it with, they stuck with it. And it took time. It found an audience. Word of mouth went around. The critics loved it, and lo and behold, after a couple of years, it had legs and became a success. Would never happen today. Cheers would have been canceled 6 months in.
So let's talk about the state of talk radio right now in the era of Donald Trump. It was something you wrote at talkers.com a while ago in the Daily Trade email that I get, which I encourage everybody to sign up for. And you talked about how, for the first time in a long time, there's this concept where maybe liberal talk radio could actually make a comeback in an era of Donald Trump.
Yeah, it can, because there are so many people out there who are passionately opposed to Donald Trump, and now they would galvanize behind an aspect of the media that served their interests, and that is to be critical of the president. One of the problems in recent years of attracting a liberal audience versus a conservative one is that the liberals were not as passionate about their liberalism as conservatives were passionate about their conservatism, and conservatives felt for years that the rest of the media was liberal and not serving their interests, which is true to a certain degree. Now that's changed. There's still room for conservative media, and certainly media that supports Donald Trump will always have, or at least for the time being, a very interested, passionate audience. So I'm not saying radio should swing on some pendulum from right to left. But what I'm saying is anybody who says, well, liberal radio doesn't work anymore, or they call it progressive radio, they're missing the point that this is the day after the Beatles broke with the British invasion, as opposed to the day before when Bobby Rydell and Frankie Avalon were big stars. You've got to change. And right now, the mood of the public is such that it would support both revolutionary radio, which I consider to be Trump. He's a revolutionary. He's changing government, etc. And the resistance movement, which are the anti-Trumpites. And this could be very good for both sides. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm a First Amendment freak. That would be great for the industry and ultimately great for the public.
Oh, absolutely. That whenever you can have more conversation, more dialogue, more disagreement is for the better. So then what does conservative talk radio do in the era of Trump? And I know a lot of hosts struggle with this, which is a sense of, hey, support the guy on a lot of things, not everything. And do I pick and choose my battles? Do I spend time on the things I disagree with? Or do I ignore those things and just focus on the things I agree with? I'm not asking for me. I know the answer, how I run my show. But this is a struggle that I think a lot of people deal with. So some conservative talk show hosts, I think, sadly, are becoming, it's like state-run, you know, North Korea media. And it's just boring as hell, quite frankly. And then there's some who obviously still have not gotten over the fact that they were against Trump in the primary and the general, and now he's the president. So they're always focusing on the things that he does wrong that they don't like. What's the way forward in that sense?
Well, first of all, let's first look at truth and ethics and authenticity. My mantra is seek truth, not victory. Although some people think there's not a lot of money to be made in truth. Maybe that should be, you know how the Washington Post now says, you know, democracy dies when there's no light in the darkness and all the news that's fit to print and the truth is more important than ever. Maybe they should all have the slogan, there's no money in the truth, because that's really what it comes down to. But that being said, and aside from my own personal feeling that our culture, forget radio, forget making money, forget everything, our culture needs a little dose of seek truth, not victory. I think that the talk show hosts have to be less fearful of their audiences. I think that the very, very, very pro-Trump hosts who were anti-Trump to begin with have buckled under the pressure of their audiences criticizing them for criticizing Trump. And we've seen some people lose their shows over it. We've seen others hang in there and maintain their own truths and call it as they see it. But we've seen many, many more just go from one extreme to the other. And now Trump could do no wrong. And any criticism of Trump is fake news. Mm-hmm. And all of that. I don't have to lecture your audience because they know all of this stuff. They're talk radio listeners and they're listening to you, so that they're very well informed. But I do believe that those that are conservative have a lot of soul searching to do and have to find their way. Because are you true to Trump or are you true to the ideals of conservative philosophy? And there are some areas, I have to tell you, where the conservative movement is being served very well by Trump. And, you know, in terms of the total picture, I could see where conservatives should be happy that they have a Republican in the White House. And Trump is doing a lot of things. A lot of them don't get covered in the media because they're not shiny objects, as it says. But there are some benefits happening for the conservative movement. But there are also things that are being brought up by this administration that should scare conservatives based upon the fundamentals of conservatism. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity within the spectrum of conservative talk show radio to pick and choose how you want to handle it. Ultimately, I believe authenticity and being true to your own ideals and being true to the interests of your audience in terms of what's good for them, in your opinion, will win out. But it's challenging as heck right now, Rich. And you painted the picture very accurately.
It was challenging during the campaign as well, Michael Harrison, because during the campaign, there was this moment of you could say nine great things about Trump, say one negative, and that's when the phones would light up with the people who said you're just Trump bashing. Now, you know, the way I approach things is I think it's very important to call balls and strikes, because I think otherwise we wind up like Air America was years ago. And it becomes very much about a mission of accomplishing, I don't know, some sort of political agenda versus being an entertainer and a truth seeker. And then I think we're doomed. And I've said that to my audience recently, by the way, Michael, because I've come out against this healthcare Ryan bill, which I think is nonsense. But I've heard other talkers going on about how it's the greatest thing in the world. And I don't believe them, you know. And I've said to my audience, listen, I can't lie to you. I can't betray you. You trust me to give you my take and how I feel. And I can't change that for any purpose other than, you know, I wouldn't do it. And so that's the commitment I've made to the audience. And I've made that commitment to them because I don't want to wind up becoming just a propaganda machine. Also, propaganda is boring as hell.
Yeah, propaganda does become boring. And one of the problems with super serving the core, and I'm using a term, folks, here with Rich that is inside shop, but just to explain, every audience, whether it's radio, whether it's music, whether it's politics, you have a core audience, the most ardent fans, the people that really are hardcore. And then it spreads out from that to people that are mildly interested or people have different degrees of support of that point of view until you finally get out to the people that don't really care. And you want to expand your audience, but you don't want to lose your core. And this is the struggle that programming radio faces, is how do you keep the core happy without so super serving the core that, like a star in space, gravity becomes stronger than the outward pressure to keep it expanded, and you get a black hole in space. Eventually, a star will collapse under its own weight. And that's what happens when you're programming radio and you super serve the core with a total fear of, oh my gosh, we can't afford to lose one listener. And when you do that, you wind up having a smaller and smaller but happier and happier audience.
Right.
You've got to be, you can't be afraid to annoy people, irritate people, and have people say, why are you saying that? That's not a conservative thing to say. Or back in music radio, we faced that. Why are you playing that song? That's not heavy metal rock. You know, that's not the format. You've got to break format. Otherwise, you become stagnant and you implode. This is the challenge of programming and strategizing what we call in radio positioning.
Positioning.
Yep.
Positioning in terms of what you believe that you want to project going forward as a brand?
Yes. Positioning on what you want to project so that you can go forward as a success.
Okay.
I mean, you know, if you're totally idealistic, you'll wind up on a soapbox in the public park. I mean, come.
Well, listen, there's a lot of money in that. You know, people come by, they give you sandwiches.
Remember what I said before? There's no money in the truth. You know, the first thing you've got to come to realize with is don't be a hypocrite and don't believe that you're no what you doesn't stink.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is if you take it on yourself and I know all the answers and I blah, 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 and you try to make people think that, you're eventually going to be shown to be a fool because no one has all the answers and the truth changes based upon circumstances.
That's true. I mean,
the ultimate thing that's going to decide how supportive of Donald Trump conservative hosts should be is the reality of what Donald Trump does and how the American public, which will always have mood swings and always be fickle, whether more people join the Trump supporters or Trump supporters start to abandon him. One of those two things are going to happen, and we don't know which one it is, because one, we don't know really what's going to happen with the economy. Two, we really don't know what's going to happen internationally in terms of our relationship with the world. And three, we don't know what the heck he's going to do.
Right.
So you've got you can't just say, here's how I'm going to handle it, because the world will be different in a week and a month and a year and 8 years.
Michael Harrison, editor and publisher of Talkers. We're having an extended conversation here, a special Zioli podcast exclusive for you. It's a great conversation, not encumbered by commercials and time and all the other nonsense. So I'm really enjoying it. I hope you are as well. And I'm so grateful that Michael Harrison, a legend in this business, 50 years of broadcasting, has agreed to spend some time with me this afternoon. So let's talk about AM radio. Obviously, this is Talk Radio 1210 WPHD AM. This is the podcast version. Some of this on the air, some of this on podcast. AM radio. I've been hearing about the death of AM radio now for 20 years, literally 20 years, I think.
It's living a lot longer than people thought it would. And had Rush Limbaugh and talk radio not come along in the late 80s after the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine, there really wouldn't be much AM radio that gets big audiences anymore, because FM radio in the 80s was eating AM radio's lunch when it came to playing music.
Mm-hmm.
And the post-war baby boomers were getting older and older. They knew how to use AM radio, whereas a lot of the younger kids did not know about AM. They only knew FM. So talk radio and the maturity of the post-war baby boomers in the 80s opened the door to AM radio having a new life. And it's gone on now for 25, 30, 33, 35 years, longer than it might have due to the factors that I just mentioned. Going forward is going to be challenging for any of the media based in 20th century technology. So we're on very, very shaky ground going forward.
Very shaky ground going forward because of the technology of AM radio. Does that mean that you don't see cars keeping the AM band in the car?
I see. Well, in terms of the car and the connected dashboard, I have a funny view on that. I just say, hey, Bluetooth and smartphones, and there's your connected dashboard. everything else is a potential car accident as far as I'm concerned. And remember, I told you that now, because 10 years from now, what I say at this point might be quite prescient.
Yes.
But that being said, I don't think it's going to matter to anybody other than those who have a great financial interest in owning AM and FM sticks, back to that word, and licenses to broadcast on AM and FM, how the programming is delivered technologically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the digital age is going to provide a great even playing field for those in AM radio, FM radio, and any satellite radio, internet radio, podcasting, any kind of broadcasting you want. I think that the day of the different appliance, a television set, a radio on your table, the newspaper coming in print at your doorstep, or a magazine being a slick version of that, a film only being shown in the movies, then in television, and then on a DVD, or a piece of music coming to you on a vinyl or a CD, I think that that is very 20th century. And here in 2017, it's like 1917. If you looked at the roads, you would see cars and you'd see horses sharing the same road. I wouldn't say, well, look, the horses are still on the road. I guess by 1980, there'll still be horses on the road. No, there wouldn't be. And I don't think going forward, we're going to see radios, televisions, print paper, records, all of these things. It's not necessary. It's old technology, but everything in its time, everything in its place, and you have to grow through it demographically. The generations change. Children grow up. Old people grow older and die. And I think it's just a matter of time when it won't matter anymore.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right on that, Michael, because from my own personal belief is that if there's Wi-Fi, which a lot of cars have now, and there's a whole little dashboard center, but they like my show, they're going to find a way to listen to me. In fact, some people prefer to listen online versus the AM. It's clear.
You're influencing them to do that by virtue of the fact that you and I are having this conversation on a podcast,
right,
which
exactly.
is a new. I mean, you're encouraging people. This is the dilemma that AM radio faces, or FM radio faces, or any radio faces, is that in order to keep up with the opportunity to have your content consumed by the public, you have to encourage people to go to that other medium called the internet. And therefore, it's not like saying, well, the only place that you can hear Rich Zeoli is on AM radio, so hang on to those transistors, folks, and don't sell your car, because otherwise you won't be able to hear him anymore. Radio itself is fueling the evolution that will lead to its technological demise as exclusively being on the old AM radio receiver.
So then if I think you guys just published your list of the 100 top sports talkers, right?
Yes.
That's coming out. Now, if Chris Christie wants to get on that list one day, mm-hmm. and he says to you, Michael Harrison, if I'm going to become a sports talker, what do I do? And I'm not convinced he's going to, by the way, because I think, you know, part of him still sees himself as Donald Trump's chief of staff someday. But there's another part of him that wants to make money and thinks this is the pathway and wants to do it. What would you advise him to do? And where do you see his career going?
If Chris Christie were to suddenly go on a major radio station as a sports talk show host, I think he'd be an instantaneous candidate for the Heavy 100 simply because of the subjective nature of that chart, which says important as opposed to necessarily most listened to,
right, or good,
most longevity. I mean, he'd be important. Everybody
right.
would be talking about him. People would check him out. They may listen and then say he stinks and not listen anymore, and he wouldn't be on the second year. And they wouldn't continue to have him if he didn't carry his weight, no pun intended. I think that he would be a big attraction for at least 6 months. After that, everything else that I discussed earlier will come into play and see if he has what it takes to do it in the long run. But I think that he'd be on the Heavy 100 right away, especially if he replaced Mike Francesa on WFAN. It's a major platform.
Well, listen, Michael Harrison, I want to thank you for being so generous with your time today. This has been incredible. Editor, publisher, talkers.com, and a real inspiration to so many people in this industry. You keep us going. You keep us inspired. You keep us with our chins up on some dark times in the industry. We appreciate it. And thanks, man. I can't thank you enough for joining me here. I really appreciate it.
It was an honor being with you, and it makes it easy. Guys like you coming up in the industry and doing what you do makes what I do easy and inspires me. So thank you, Rich Zeoli.
Well, thank you. And I will see you at Talkers this couple months. We're a couple months away.
Look forward to seeing you.
Michael Harrison, thank you so much.